Hey, I'm Dalton Ross, and welcome to the EW Morning Live podcast, where we bring you the best TV and movie interviews from our Entertainment Weekly morning show on Sirius XM. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at EWML Podcast, and get a little taste of what we offer every day on Sirius XM channel 105. With that said, now there's nothing to it but to get to it, so sit back and enjoy this week's edition of the EW Morning Live podcast.
This is EW Morning Live with Dalton Ross and Jessica Shaw on Entertainment Weekly Radio.
Back. Welcome back. There we are. To EW Morning Live. Dalton and Jessica here with you on Entertainment Weekly Radio. Really excited for our next guest. She is one of the stars of the movie that we have been anticipating for a long time now, ever since we talked to the cast out at Comic-Con right after their big panel last year. Spider-Man Homecoming comes out July 7th everywhere, and Zendaya is here in studio right now. What's going on?
I'm super excited, man.
Yeah, we're excited.
The date is slowly approaching.
I know, we're getting closer and closer, a few weeks away. My kids keep asking me, like, wait, when's it coming out? When's it coming out? And I got to say, what's so cool about this is Jessica and I had a chance to see it. And we saw each other after the screen because we don't sit together at movies.
Yeah.
That's a whole other thing. She likes the
thing.
Back row.
Gotcha.
I like to go earlier.
I'm the back person, yeah. Too. Yeah.
She's up to like nefarious, shady activity in the back. I don't know what's going on there. So we both had this instant impression that was so cool because I've seen a lot of Spider-Man movies, mm-hmm. and I've liked a lot of Spider-Man movies. But what felt so different about this, I was like, oh my God, this actually feels like Queens. Like, I'm looking at the kids and I'm seeing a lot of colors of the rainbow here, and I'm feeling like this is actually a real representation of Queens.
Yeah, no, that was one of my favorite parts about this movie is the diversity in the cast. You know, it's reflecting what New York looks like, you know, which, and it should be represented in that way, I think. But no, I think everybody is also very distinct characters, and it's fun to see how everybody works with each other. And I love that the awkwardness and the funny that comes out of those real moments in high school that we've all kind of been through. You know what I mean? I think the big difference about this movie is, you know, you get to see him, other than, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, of course, which is huge, but the fact that he's 15, you know, and you really get to see and understand what it would be like if a 15-year-old got these powers. I mean, of course, they're not going to do everything right. They're not going to be perfect. They're going to mess up. They're going to be, you know, a 15-year-old superhero. You know what I mean? And I think that they did a really great job, John, Tom, you know, a really great job of capturing that, because that's what makes Spider-Man so real for everybody, is that he's just a kid, and just a kid from Queens, you know?
Yeah. So tell us about your when you first met to play Michelle, and your first meeting and your audition, and like what how did that go?
Well, you know, what's funny is I didn't really know what type of character my character was going to be until like I showed up for work. So, you know, during the audition process, it's very, you know, secretive. So it's really like girl in Spider-Man movie. You know what I mean? It's not like,
right,
you
yes.
have no idea,
yes.
right? And it's just some random sides that could be from the movie or could be from anything. And so I just wanted to be a part of it. I was like, if I have one line, I don't care. Like, I just want to be a part of it, right? And so, you know, it was that first audition. Then I had a meeting with our director who, you know, I got to talk to, and, you know, he just kind of explained his idea for this movie and what he wanted to make it and create. And then a chemistry read with Tom, which went really well. And I was super nervous, but of course he's super nice and the director was super cool. So that eased my mind a little bit. And then obviously the phone call that says, hey, you got the part. And then, you know, I'm there and I get to read the script and I'm like, okay. So my character's a little interesting. She's a little different, yeah. you know, because I didn't know at all what, you know, what she would be like. And so I got to meet with our director and sit down and go through like some of the different references and ideas he had for the character, how to make her, you know, you still like her, but she's, you know, she's not always the nicest.
She's got an edge to her.
You know, she speaks her mind, says what she thinks, but for some reason it comes off like likable. You know what I mean? And it's very dry. It's very real. And what she says is actually like very, like, you're like, you know what? I relate to that. I get that. Maybe it was at the wrong time and in the wrong situation. But you know what? It works. Hey, you know? And I think that she's super smart, very intellectual. And I think because she's so smart, she just doesn't know how to interact with other kids. So she doesn't have friends, you know? And I think that there's a lot of kids out there like that, including myself. So I relate to her in more ways than one.
She was the best. And like you said, it feels very high school.
Very.
It's, you know, and she was like, I loved her. She's like kind of awkward. Mm-hmm. And she's, you know, like the different way, even the way like she's walking and who she's sort of following around.
Yeah.
Or when she decides to speak, which isn't like all that often, Mm-mm. to be honest, is just, she's a blast.
But she's cool. And what's yeah. interesting about this is that she's cool and that, the other thing I took away from this movie, I was like, the smart kids are the cool kids.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this, they're doing the academic decathlon, and they're the cool kids in
yeah.
school now, which is a big switch from the way it used to be in
which
sort of high
the
school
truth
movies.
Now,
yeah,
I think,
right.
you know, like, you know, even, you know, our bully, Flash, who is yeah. played by Tony, it's like, this is the new age bully. It's different. You know
yeah.
what I mean? It's not necessarily one type of person. It's that's kind of like the dynamics in high school now are just different. It's not like the old school, like this is where people go and these are the groups that are cool and these are the groups that are not cool, you know. It's different. And so I think that's kind of how, you know, I guess we reflected it. And you know, I like that she's awkward too. I like that she's awkward, but she's awkward and makes everybody else feel awkward, but doesn't feel awkward when she's doing that. Does that make any
yeah.
sense?
She owns herself.
She owns it.
Yeah.
Like, I know you guys feel weird, but I don't.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep going. You know what I mean? So it's fun. It was really fun.
I heard John Watts, the director, that one of the inspirations that he sort of cited was Ally Sheedy
yeah.
in The Breakfast Club, which is like the best inspiration ever.
Yeah.
Anyone that's seen The Breakfast Club. That's
yeah.
sort of
so
perfect.
Good. I mean, there was a lot. And it was fun, again, to have that freedom to just like do whatever with her, you know, and then just have fun. And even though it's a small role, you know, it was fun for me to just kind of make a little moment with my little one-liners, you know.
You mentioned that the audition process was like kind of secretive, and there are amazing things that go on throughout the movie that obviously we won't spoil. But how hard has it been keeping all the secrets about this movie?
I think, you know, the hardest person that it's for is really Tom, because he has got a big mouth and has accidentally slipped up a few times about some things, and the next thing it's like, oh, did you know that in Spider-Man, da, da, da. He's like, dang it, you know. But I mean, I who can blame him? He's playing Spider-Man, and who wouldn't want to tell the world like all the cool stuff that happens and that's going on? And I, you know, he's done such a good job with this movie. I mean, he has to take on such a big weight. Like, that's, I mean, you're a superhero. That's, I don't really envy that position at all, because, you know, there's so many people that connect so deeply to Peter Parker and to Spider-Man, and he's really taken it on so well and put everything he has into it. And I just, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes you want to say it. Sometimes it's interesting to be quiet and see what people come up with. And that's kind of fun too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just, we'll see.
You have
just,
you slipped
go see
up
the
ever?
Movie. No.
No.
Never.
All right, so we need
I
to get her
it.
Slip up in the next minute somewhere.
I'm like, just go see the movie, guys. Just go see the movie.
What's it like working with Tom Holland? Because, you know, you guys seem to have a fun relationship. You know, you're giving each other the business on social media
always.
In a fun way. And like, you're lip sync battling together and stuff. What was it like with working with him?
No, he's great. He's really, really, I think the most important thing to me is that he is a good person. And it's good to know that like the person who gets to play your favorite superhero is actually like a nice dude, you know? He, again, loves doing this. And I think when we were shooting in Atlanta, I think one of the things that at least was nice for me is it really felt like, for half of the movie at least, it felt like we were just shooting like this awkward teen coming of age story. You know what I mean? It was like a comedy. And then you like step back and you remember, oh my gosh, this is a Spider-Man movie. And then just yesterday, Tom was like flipping off of these buildings and swinging from things in a harness. You know what I mean? Like, you just, I was so much in the high school part that I didn't even realize until things started coming out and I actually got to see trailers and stuff like that. Like, you did so much, Tom. Wow. Like, you were everywhere. He's working every single day and would literally, quite literally, go from being Peter Parker to Spider-Man within like outfit change, you know. And so he killed it, and I'm, you know, definitely proud to be a part of this this experience, you know.
What was it like the first time you sat down and watched the movie? Have you seen it? How many times through have you even seen it?
I saw like a super rough cut, which is like, you know, still green screens in the back, that type of thing. And it
was
amazing.
That's in the final cut.
Well, that's
that
awkward.
Yeah.
That's gonna be awkward. No, but I got to see it like as a rough, and I thought it was amazing. Like I thought it was dope, and I was so excited. And when it comes across, and there's like little animations for what's going to be CGI, like, and it's still amazing, then you know it's going to be a great movie, right? And so I was so excited after seeing it in like the roughest form, and then seeing it again almost done, it's like it's even more intense, you know. It's crazy, and like the stuff that like we can do now, like we can literally make anything happen. The technology is crazy. And Tom will sit there. He's like, "Yep, I remember doing that on mocap, and oh, I remember doing that and this, and it's crazy."
We were talking with Zendaya, star of Spider-Man: Homecoming. It's out July 7th everywhere, and you need to see it. It's awesome.
So awesome.
Last time we spoke to you right after your big Marvel panel out in Comic-Con. You came by the EW studios and stuff, and that was sort of mid late July. How'd you enjoy filming in Atlanta in the summertime? Because it's a little toasty down there.
It was hot. It was very, very hot. I would say that there was a few uncomfortable scenes. For example, in the bus. Yep. You know, we're supposed to be in this school bus, and it's just hot. I mean, hot. And we're all just stuck in there together, and it's just like, whoo! I mean, it was like... you know, it is what it is. And I, you know, my character is very, you know, like she doesn't care about clothes. Like she wears whatever she wants to wear. And I think that that's really, you know, dope. And so my character often wore these like really itchy, I like to call them grandma skirts, because they're very long and thick. And there was a lot of sweating happening in places I'd rather it not. And I had a lot of layers on as well, and it was just, I was wearing boots, it was just heavy. But then I got over it when I saw Tom in his suit, and I realized, wow, I should never complain ever again, because this man is literally doing action scenes out in this hot weather, completely covered. Like every inch of him is, you can't even get his hands out. There's no air flowing in there. It's just covered, head to toe, eyes, everything. And I was like, you know what? I can't complain anymore.
People were just running over with giant fans in between takes and stuff.
Yeah,
crazy.
They had to take care of him, because it's like, it's almost a little scary. It's like, you know, if you overheat, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, no.
Can't have that happen to Spider-Man.
No.
Is it a relief to get to not play like the traditional pretty girl?
You know, I wouldn't say it's a relief. I think it's just a nice change of pace, especially for, you know, I guess you could say like a superhero movie. It changes like the typical female character in superhero movie, which is usually just like the damsel in distress, you know what I mean? Not super independent, doesn't really say that she has her own thing going on. Her perspective constantly revolves around the superhero, right? So A, it's nice that I'm not the love interest, which means I'm not that girl. And it's nice to have that relationship that's not romantic. And I also would say I like that she's just different, you know? And I think there's so many different types of beautiful women out there. Why not showcase different types of beautiful women, you know? Because there's going to be so many young people, I think, that can connect to that and need to see that it's cool to be weird.
What did you specifically, if there's anything, Zendaya, that you said to the director, John Watts, or anyone that you wanted to sort of bring to your character? And did little touches that you wanted to give Michelle and stuff?
Well, I think, you know, it was definitely like a big collaboration. I think John knew for sure what he wanted. He's like so detailed, like so fun and cool about like having like collaborations and things like that, which was nice, but also so detailed in different things. Like every book that I read, every book that was in the background of a shot that I'm reading is like picked by John. Every author or poet on my t-shirt is picked by him. I know there was like a couple scenes where like I have a tea mug, and we just were like, what is the weirdest thing that she could be doing right now? I was like, why would you have a tea mug in the cafeteria as a 15-year-old? You know, did you get to that in the teacher's lounge? Like, how did that happen? You know, or at the party with toast? How are you at somebody's house, and how did you find the toast? Like, how did you, that means you had to go through the cupboards, find the bread, find butter, put it in the toaster, like do all this stuff at a party.
But that it really does speak to, there's such an attention to detail in this movie. The tiniest things like that, and that goes true for your character, for Peter Parker, I mean, for across the board, everyone has those teeny details that make the movie next level great.
No, I love it. I love it. Everybody, like I said, everybody did such a good job like creating their distinct characters. I think that Jacob, who plays Ned, he's so funny. He's so good in the movie.
Amazing.
He like just is such a lovable like person in real life, and like is literally the same on camera. Like it's just, he's adorable. And I think that, like, again, everybody being those distinct characters and seeing how they bounce off of each other is actually really, really nice.
Now, not only can people see you in Spider-Man Homecoming, but if they go to their newsstand, they can see you on the cover of Vogue.
Oh, snap.
What was that like, huh?
Crazy.
I mean, come on.
Still not even, I can't even believe it's real. Fun fact, I had the flu while I shot that cover.
Give me a break.
Doesn't look
swear.
It. Doesn't look it.
You
I
had
swear.
The flu.
I had the flu.
That's just rude. She can look that good when
exactly.
she's got the flu.
I was going through it. I had like a swollen gland like the whole nine, and I was just like, oh, but like it was just. Like,
and was Anna Wintour like, oh no, you're showing up?
No. But it was. I mean, it's funny because like this is the most wonderful day of my life. Yet I'm so uncomfortable, but I don't even care because I'm just so happy to have this, you know, like I completely forgot that I was even sick because I was just so excited. Well, you know, it's like that is crazy. That's one of like the biggest, I think, things that I've looked forward to in, like, it's like career milestone kind of thing that I've wanted like for a long time. And I didn't think it would come so quickly, honestly, so here it is. And what?
Well, I feel perfect, and this is the best I can look at all, so I don't know, that's just,
you're killing it, honestly.
Thank you. Well, thank
gorgeous,
you very much. I appreciate
gorgeous,
it
flawless.
Really?
Hey, that was me.
Hey.
Can you believe that? See what you just did to me?
I mean, I know this Homecoming has yet to even come out, but might we see Michelle in the future?
I mean, I sure hope so. I think my number one thing is, you know, if her character does develop and what ends up happening to her or whatever, I just want her to stay weird. I think that is my number one thing. I want her to stay that individual, independent, weird character. I think that that's really cool, and that was what makes her different. So
there's such a confidence in her weirdness that it's really appealing. It's really, really cool. Zendaya, it's a great movie. You're great in it.
Thanks
so much for coming in.
Of course.
Everyone should go see Spider-Man Homecoming when it comes out July 7th. You will not be sorry when you do so. That's going to do it for us. Zendaya, thanks for coming in.
Of course. Thank you so much.
If you missed any of today's EW Morning Live, listen anytime on your phone with the SiriusXM app.
Welcome back to EW Morning Live. Dalton Ross and Jessica Shaw here with you on Entertainment Weekly Radio. And we are just plumb obsessed with this next show, Glow, which is coming out tomorrow on Netflix. The entire first season's coming out. We have two of the stars here right now to chat all about it. Allison Brie and Marc Maron here on The Big Show. What's going on, guys?
Hi.
Hi,
nice
to see you.
Yeah, we're just telling you how, we're just obsessed with this show. It's so, so fun.
I'm so
it's
glad.
My favorite show of summer.
Oh,
it
yes.
is. Like, if you watch one show, this is it.
I'm
to
so
me.
Glad it's obsessible.
Yeah.
Is that a word? It should be a
it
word.
It is now.
It is now. It's. I mean, I remember the whole 80s, late 80s wrestling. Like, I remember this era.
Yeah.
It's so funny, too. And you guys talk about, like, I love how, like, back then they had these, you guys have these, well, characters, but also caricatures.
Yeah.
That are, like, totally like offensive in today's
Definitely.
Eyes. You know what I mean? Like when you feel like a, like, you know, like a welfare queen and Beirut and fortune cookie. And I love the fact that like no one back then really even thought about that. Like
it's a whole, it's what's kind of great about wrestling. What's great about setting a show in the world of wrestling is that anything goes, and fans of wrestling know that and take it as such. You know what I mean? No one's like, that guy is racist, especially in 80s wrestling. It's all, you just want a villain and a hero. The bigger the character, the better.
Yeah, heels and faces. Like they knew the, like, you know, they're rooting for the bad guy or the bad woman or whoever. But those characters are there to play off of, so the face can, you know, look like a hero. But sometimes the heel wins.
And let's not pretend that everything in the 80s was so on point. Like I had some Day-Glow pants.
Sure.
You know, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had some bad hair decisions and some peculiar pants for a man.
How was it revisiting that era for you, Mark?
Well, by 86, I was pretty heavily into a kind of like, you know, beatnik-y thing. Like, I wasn't really that fashion conscious, but it was the way they handled it on the show was like very honest, meticulous, not campy. And if you really think about a lot of the movies we like or watch again, they were all done during that time. For me, it wasn't that much of a jump. It was a little bit of a time travel. Like, am I in college again? It didn't strike me as that odd until I saw them, you know, wrestling with leotards. That was a world I didn't know about. The struggle of keeping things out of your crack and making sure your boobs aren't falling out. And I saw a lot of it.
Hashtag the struggle is real.
The struggle is real. At a certain point, I was just like, don't tape the leotard to my butt. Just let the butt show. The cheeks are going to be out. I've committed to this. You know, we're going all in. But I think it's cool to see the 80s fashions across the cast, because there's 14 women on the show, and it's just a really fun landscape of 80s fashion, all the different types of women, and then you see them in workout clothes and in regular clothes. Beth Morgan, our costume designer, I think did a fantastic job and really showcased a lot of fun looks.
And some of it was hideous. I mean, like,
when I say fun, sort of with quotes.
No, but like, I couldn't imagine, like, I remember those clothes. I remember them being around. But when you see them again, you're like, with all these pastel colors and these weird, I mean, it was like, what was happening?
I do have to say, there was an awareness in the 80s of women's bodies and like cinching things at a woman's natural waist, which reminds me more of the 60s. I did a movie recently that's set in 2002. And those clothes were hideous. I was like, and that's obviously not that long ago. And I was sort of like, God, this was just a time when no one cared at all. What they look, pants are so low and just hitting you in the wrong place. And the materials were disgusting. I much prefer fashions of the 80s.
There's all that slightly kind of hot-rodded preppy shit going on, and these kind of bold colors. But then there was this, like, there were some outfits that were, they almost didn't register. They were just sort of like this haze of pastel color. All the extras were dressed like this too. Just sort of like, you know, average people clothing in the 80s, it was like we were just doomed. I mean, we're just moving through the world.
Well, that's,
you know,
what's
like,
fun
lost.
Is because none of the women on our show, none of our characters on the show have a lot of money. So you're not seeing these crazy outlandish heightened fashions.
It's not dynasty. Yeah.
No. Yeah. It's much more down and out in Beverly Hills. No, just down and out in the 80s.
Which I love. And Mark, like you said, it's there's never a sense that the 80s is kitschy. It's your time period,
right?
And it is definitely identifiable, but you're never hit over the top. And it was one of the many things that I thought that the producers and directors handled really, really well, because they set the tone without it being like
tongue-in-cheek or campy.
Our DP, Christian Springer, shot Atlanta and Baskets on FX. I think he's a big part of how the look was developed of the show and how it does kind of feel like an 80s movie, and everything looks a bit dingy and it's not sort of like too bright and shiny. I think that really adds
Until
a lot to the aesthetic
happens.
Of the show. Oh, yeah. And then take
it.
Full departure.
Everything gets heightened.
I know. Well,
Allison, I read that you had to audition a bunch of times to get this role. What was it that they were looking for that you had to convince them that you had?
I think at first it was more about them wanting to discover new talent, which is a really cool thing. You know, not a lot of people go about casting shows in that way, where they really want faces that people have not seen before. And I think that they pictured Ruth being, you know, she's always described, especially in the first episode, as being very unconventional. And I think for them, I have played a lot of really polished characters. You know, they've seen so many pictures of me with hair and makeup done and sexy photos taken. And they sort of thought, that's not who this character is. But I really was looking to play a different type of character. And actually, part, I think, of what made me want the role was how much they didn't think I was right for the role. Then I was like, oh, then I really should do something like this to prove not just to them, but to myself and to the world that I am capable of doing grittier stuff and stripped down kind of stuff. But also,
no makeup. Most of the time, no makeup
really?
On Allison's
when I was
face.
Not in the wrestling ring, no makeup, but eyebrows. We filled in, got to get those 80s brows. And that was about it. It was very freeing. I think that they saw a lot of the character in me once I was auditioning, and I auditioned 4 times for the part.
Which is very Ruth, by
the way. It was like the more they brought me in, the more desperate I was. And I do think in a lot of audition rooms normally, you know, you try to play it really cool because the more you act like you don't want the part, it's kind of people maybe want you more. And in this case, I just did not do that. Every time I left, thank you so much, and I just want to reiterate that I really love the material, and I will do my best. They were just like, she is her. She's, maybe they just out. Felt bad for me.
I love it. What about you, Mark? How did you read this? And were you like, I have to play this character?
Well, I wasn't like, I don't, in my life, I can count the number of auditions that I've really been on in one hand. It was never like until I did my own show on IFC, I didn't do a lot of acting, and I wasn't out there trying to be an actor. And, you know, once I finished the IFC show, I was just kind of tired and willing to take some rest. And then my management sent over these sides and this script, and I was like, the writing was so good, and the guy was just down and out, bitter kind of, but you know, and he had a vision, but he was sort of a loser in a way. And I was like, I know this guy, you know, I was that guy for 20 years. So there was part of me that really kind of connected with it immediately. And they weren't looking at people in LA, and they didn't know what they were looking for, apparently. And I have this personal trainer that I see when I feel like I can, and she's an actress. So I had her come in and read Allison's part, and I had this guy who works for me sometimes tape it. And I went down to the eyeglasses place and got some aviator frames and a Lacoste shirt that I actually owned. And I kind of got into it, and I did a few of those, and we sent them in, and they picked one and sent it off to, I guess, Jen and Genji and Liz. And they cast me off of that tape.
Wow. You guys have such good chemistry. Also, the two of you,
thank you,
together, I mean, right from the outset, and it's, you know, Mark, your character's like not so into, you know, Allison's character, and she has to prove herself as you had to prove yourself.
We get along pretty good off stage, you know. She has to, you know, kind of keep me in check because I connect with her. What are you going to do?
Yeah, sometimes too much.
I know. I know.
Just like the show. Just like, what's it? I'm a big B movie guy.
Yeah.
And so the fact that your character Sam, like, he's this B movie director, like, I want to see more blood. I want to watch Blood Disco,
oh
man.
My God,
yeah,
I want to
watch Blood Disco. We got to show all the movies, the Sam Sylvia movies.
It's
funny because, like, I really got the sense with certain decisions I made about the character, about the cowboy boots, like, you know, I didn't change my pants the whole time. Mm-hmm. Like, this guy really saw himself as part of, or at least aspiring to be part of that crew of 70s directors. Like, he idolizes De Palma, mm-hmm, and he really thinks, I don't know that he necessarily thinks his movies are B-movies. I really think he's just really believes he's on the cusp of really making his masterpiece. And, you know, towards the end when that whole thing is revealed, it's just heartbreaking. That scene is so brutal, you know, at the party upstairs.
Don't give it away.
I'm not.
Yeah. But like, so good. It's so good.
And it's so real because that shit happens in Hollywood all the time.
Yes. Yep.
You know, when he comes unhinged at the end, you know, I was just happy I was into the guy enough to where I could have the emotions that happened there. It was like kind of mind-blowing. But yeah, I'd like to see his movies. I mean, if we do some more seasons, maybe I'll be at work at one of my movies, and I don't know how they're going to play it. I have no idea.
I like hearing you talk about Sam because I do think that part of the reason these characters get along, even though sort of from the outside they couldn't be more different, but really they're very similar in the fact that they both fancy themselves amazing artists, great at their craft, and the world is not, you know, heavily misunderstood.
Kindred
they're not
spirits.
Just seen that way by anyone else, and they find this outlet in wrestling, like this thing that also similarly both of them are like, a women's wrestling show, and then once they start to get into it, they're like, we could make this a great thing. That
scene is
passion
so good. That was so fun.
Connects
when we're,
them.
When we're looking at theaters, you know, like, I'm just thinking about it. Like, because you get into shooting, and you're just shooting. And then when you watch it later, you're like, oh, man.
And it was a fun thing, too, about this show. And also what I think makes it feel authentic is that we shot a lot of it on location. So the motel that we all live in is a location that we would shoot at all the time. The exterior of the gym was way out in Sun Valley. And, like, that theater, what is it called?
I don't know. It's
Aztec.
Over in Hollywood. Yeah, yeah,
no,
yeah.
No, it's downtown.
Oh,
the
that
Mayan.
The one.
The
oh,
Mayan.
The Mayan. But I, when we shot that thing, we were looking at theaters. That wasn't at that theater, I don't think.
Yes, we were in the
Mayan.
Okay,
all right.
and that theater is downtown L.A., and it just
this
like...
This is dialogue from season two.
Ruth and Sam.
Yes,
the ring
it
sides
was.
We had.
All right.
And the theater itself is so huge and beautiful. And actually, the first time I ever saw live wrestling was at the Mayan, at that theater downtown, seeing Lucha Vavoom, Mexican wrestling slash drag show slash...
With the burlesque
all
stuff.
All sort of burlesque stuff. Like, yeah.
But that's where we shot. That's where you shot the dream sequence.
Yes.
But the real.
And it's where we went.
Did that thing, right. But it's not where we did the final match. That
no.
was at that other place.
Yeah, that was. At the.
In Hollywood. At the El Rey or somewhere?
No. The. Starts with a P.
Pantages.
Not the Pantages. The Palladium.
The Palladium, oh, right.
Yes. The Palladium, yes.
Didn't the Lakers used to play there?
Did
I don't
they?
Think so.
No. They
forum.
Didn't they all
the
play
forum.
At the Forum?
The
forum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just watched the 30 for 30.
The worst place
about
to
the
Lakers
Celtic and the
Celtics. Was so good.
It was so,
it was so
good.
Yeah.
What was your, but as you're talking about the wrestling matches in these places, I mean, I was curious, Allison, when you were learning, not just so much having to learn wrestling moves, but how much were you learning those, but how much were you learning how to not get hurt?
That was a big part of our training. So we trained with Chavo Guerrero Jr., who is a pro wrestler and comes from a long line of wrestlers. So he's been wrestling since he was a toddler, essentially. But we also had this woman, Shauna Duggins, who's an amazing stunt woman and was our stunt coordinator for the show. And so Chavo would be like, so for this move, you just flip over, and would like demonstrate it for us. And she'd be like, okay, and how can we break that down and do it in a way that's safe? Even Chavo really started with us doing back bumps, which is where, you know, you fall backwards. Like if you get clotheslined, you take a back bump, you fall, hit your whole back on the mat. And he really started with us like sitting on the mat, slowly laying our backs down to get a feel of like the slam and you know, dispersing our weight and kind of knowing a lot of it was about here's how you can do these moves over and over and over and not get hurt. And nobody got seriously injured while we were shooting the show. But I will say the moves hurt. You learn to really respect wrestling and the athleticism behind it. That's very real. Whatever people say about wrestling, these people are superb athletes. The way it's like acrobatics and dance and a sport at the same time, you know, when your body is slamming on the mat, it hurts. Your whole body is slamming on the mat. I think the biggest misconception about wrestling is that, like, there's a trampoline under the mat because everyone bounces right. so much. Really, it's just wood and metal under a thin mat, and there's, like, spaces in the wood and metal, so it gives when you hit it. But you're hitting a hard surface, you know?
And as you're doing those moves, are you also having to think about like stomping the mat to make the noise or hitting it with your hand?
Yeah,
like all that
a little
sort of
bit.
Weird
that is,
choreography?
Definitely. That is part of it, is helping to make the noise, helping to sell it, much more so when you are not in a powerful position. So when someone's attacking you, it's like really on you to sell that you are getting hurt.
Sell the pain.
Sell the pain. But I mean, that's a lot also that... that's what we talked about a lot with Chavo and also Kia Stevens, who's an actress on the show, and she is a pro wrestler for a long time, Awesome Kong. She also wrestled on WWE as Karma, and it was very informative to watch her matches and Chavo's matches and get an idea of sort of how they are as people and then see them transform in their matches in the ring. And Chavo talked to us a lot about committing to your character, and so much of how we would choreograph the matches had to do with not only our strengths because of our body types or size, but also because of our wrestling characters that we were creating on the show and that dialogue. And so, like, you're a heel. You would only do this type of move or this type of move. You're going to do dirty moves because you're a bad guy. You're going to sneak up and kick her from behind. You know, a face would never do that because they're the good guy. They got to look good.
How long did you train?
We trained,
or you might be naturally athletic, and
no, the biggest compliment ever was Chavo after we had been shooting for a few weeks, saying to me, "You're a natural athlete," and I was like, "Chavo, that's the greatest compliment I've never." This is it's a lot of work goes into this. We trained for 4.5 weeks before we started shooting with Chavo and Shauna and Helena Barrett, who was my stunt double, sort of tapping in and out with me on the show, even though we do all our own stunts. And then we continued training for the 3.5 months that we were shooting. So our training gym was right next to our shooting stages, and if we weren't shooting, we were over there training and learning new moves and adding on to our matches and basically building to our finale episode. And at the same time, I did sort of up the ante with my personal trainer in Los Angeles, and we were doing really heavy lifting.
Was also an actor?
No, he didn't read opposite me for the role or anything. Mark's trainer.
I would like to say I had to relearn how to do coke and smoke cigarettes, you know, in order to get
a lot of work. Yeah,
that took about
a lot of work.
It took about 10 minutes of training. Yeah, it comes right back to you, oddly. Yeah.
Like, it's like riding a bike.
Yeah, I'm a natural drug athlete, apparently.
Did you watch wrestling back in the day in the 80s?
Not
like the
really.
Roddy Piper and all that stuff?
No, I was sort of like, I was one of the guys that was kind of condescending about it. But over the years, because my business partner, my producer of my podcast, who I've worked in radio with for years, he was a childhood fan of wrestling. So over that time, you know, before GLOW, I had interviewed like Mick Foley. I'd interviewed Colt Cabana, CM Punk, AJ Lee. And I'd really gotten schooled about wrestling. So I'd been involved in some on-air wrestling scripts, you know, that we used to do at Air America occasionally with Mick Foley. So I had an appreciation for it, but I was not. It was like, you know, heavy metal and wrestling were not my things as a teenager, but I definitely grew to appreciate it.
What would be your character? I assume you'd want to be a heel, I assume, but maybe
I'm
wrong.
I think I'm a natural heel, but I think that if we go a little deeper, there's a face in there.
Oh, you think so?
Peel back the layer.
Yeah, there's just a sad face in there, and on the surface, an aggravated heel.
I think one of you mentioned that this, Mark, I think you mentioned that the show wasn't being cast out of LA. And I have to say, I love all of these women on the show are just like,
they're fantastic.
They're all amazing. Mm-hmm. And it was just so, it felt like as I'm sitting there watching the show, I was like, yes, like these are not women I've seen before always on television. Yeah. It was such a great thing as a viewer.
Genji has a knack for discovering new and interesting talent, and they really looked at women from all different performance backgrounds. You know, Kate Nash comes from music. She still makes music. She's, you know, a pop star turned. Now she does sort of more edgy, I feel like. It's more like edgy alternative. But, you know, we have a lot of theater actresses. Betty Gilpin really comes from the New York theater world. Gail Rankin, Sunitha Mani.
She's so funny.
I mean, and she
has, I used to just
like,
watch her standing there, I'd laugh.
Oh, yeah. We went and saw, she has a dance group, Cocoon Central Dance Team. They're like an improv, not improv, they're like a performance dance group that's like just interesting performance art. So it's really cool to watch what each woman brings to their character. And as we were shooting the show, Liz and Carly had an idea of what the story, like of what the overarching storylines would be for the season. But a lot of it they left open to kind of, in that way, like with the wrestling, to play to people's strengths and kind of see who these women were and what they were bringing to the table and then kind of writing to that.
But they were still writing when we started shooting. Like, so when we started shooting episode one, in episode three, they were writing as it went on. So, you know, as the show went on, they were able to write for what each of us was doing as characters. Like, mm-hmm. they were able to like lock into my voice and what mm-hmm. I could and couldn't do or what they wanted me to do and actually write specifically for the character that I was creating. And I think that happened with everybody.
I think they realized how much you were capable of and then they kept writing
meatier and
better stuff.
Well, that was the big thing is that like apparently when they saw my tape, I'm like, how did I get cast? And I asked Genji and I asked the showrunners and they were like, well, everyone was like, well, he's the guy. But there was a problem of like, but can he act? I mean, can he
like
do
he
it?
Is Sam.
He's Sam, but can he act? So then they said
to everyone, we're looking for like a Mark Maron type. That's someone who can act. Like, right. Is there that? Do we have that?
Well, there's a second round of auditions. Yeah.
Well, the way Genji explained it to me, because I interviewed her for the podcast, I'm going to put it up, I guess, maybe next week or a week or two, that they didn't really know exactly what they were looking for, which I think happens a lot.
Right.
They'll know something when they see it. And I think it was pretty immediate that I could do it. But like Carly said, that they had no idea whether I could act. I mean, I'm a comedian and a podcaster. And I'm, you know, but I did do 4 seasons of me. But you know, that's different. And obviously, this is in my wheelhouse. I'm not being cast for, you know, parts where I have to learn Serbian or anything.
Yet. Got to really appreciate their, you know, the fact that they all wanted to take those kinds of risks with everyone in the cast. You know, all of our stories are kind of similar. Like, we weren't sure if you were going to be right for it, but you're proving us wrong. Like, give it a shot. It's kind of it's a great vote of confidence for the whole cast.
Well, it's sort of like, again, to the story itself, where your character is sort of having to figure it out as she goes around and trying different characters and what have you.
Mm-hmm. It was an amazing set. I mean, it was like a very, like, supportive, huge community of people. Like, everybody was very engaged and involved, and like on top of acting, you know, they have to do all this physicality. There's so many different levels of theater going on, because you know, you had the show, but then as soon as they would enter the ring, that's a whole other stage with all these other different expectations. It was pretty fascinating to stand there, because my character is not wrestling, and a lot of times I would just be watching, and it was all very, you know, moving to see it evolve.
It was cool. There was such a raw, palpable excitement on set every day, because so many people on the show, it's like their first big job. And even for me, it was such a great opportunity. You know, I think everyone was just so excited to be there. And then because of the wrestling, yes, all the women, we were so focused and really wanted to do it justice and do a good job and not, you know, kill ourselves or anything like that as well. So there was a focus when it came to the wrestling. And because we did our wrestling training together, we really bonded and we were like a sports team. It really felt more like a sports team where we would cheer each other on. And it was always funny to me because I've never been on a set. I've never been on such a supportive set, one, but two, one that people are cheering and high-fiving just after you finish regular scenes that have no wrestling. We just do like a scene where Sam and I have dialogue together and the girls are all kind of sitting around the gym, so everyone's there for the whole scene, and you'd finish a take and everyone would be like, yeah, great scene. Come over and high-five. Great acting.
You're going to try that on your next set and people are going to be like, we don't do that.
Yes, it was.
Where are my high-fives?
It was really funny. Yeah, so
I just nailed that.
Nailed that acting.
What's going on with season two? Because I feel like this people are going to watch so quickly.
Do you guys know?
We don't know.
You really don't know.
We really don't know. I think we won't know until the show goes up on Friday and everybody gets a chance to see it.
All I'm hoping is if it happens, they shoot at the same place. Because I live in Los Angeles and I got this role and I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm going to have to drive to Culver City. And you know. But then it turns out there are these studios I didn't know about. 10 minutes from my house in Atwater. I'm like, there are studios in Atwater?
And it's great. You say studios, but it really is just like a handful of stages behind like a storage
facility. A police station.
And a police station. So it's a very weird, it actually felt so right for the show because of what the women are going through and the way that they're putting their show together, that we weren't like driving onto the shiny through the gates of Paramount. It was more like we're just like driving past the cops and through the storage unit back to these stages. It felt like
can't park in the lot. There's a truck.
Yeah, it felt like what the women, you know, probably experienced.
Well, before we let you go, I want to, there's a scene I remember watching. People are going to start watching as this Glow comes out tomorrow, Friday, on Netflix. Where I see you wrestling and I see this big bruise on your thigh.
It's real.
That's what I was wondering. Is that real?
It's real. I was thinking
the struggle is real.
The struggle is real. There was a moment, there was one episode where they had specifically written in, and actually I think the line didn't make it in the final cut of the episode, but that Mark's character comments on bruises that I have on my butt. And I got to set that day and they're like, oh, we scheduled extra time for you in hair and makeup for the bruising. And I went into hair and makeup and, you know, pulled my pants down. And our makeup artist was just like, oh, I mean, there's already bruises here. Should we just let them ride? I was like, yeah. And when I was watching the episodes too, I was like, oh,
there it is.
Those bruises are real. They're all, you can tell they're mostly finger shaped. They're like stamps of women's fingers from lifting us and body slamming and things like that.
Sure, that's what it's from.
It's so much fun. Glow, it's the entire season is out tomorrow, Friday, June 23rd on Netflix. Allison Brie, Mark Maron, thanks so much for coming in, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Love the show. All right, we'll be back with more on EW Morning Live.
EW Morning Live with Dalton Ross and Jessica Shaw on Entertainment Weekly Radio.
Welcome back to EW Morning Live. Dalton and Jessica here with you on Entertainment Weekly Radio. And Jessica and I had a movie date the other day that we were just telling you about. We went to see The Beguiled. It opens up this Friday, June 23rd, in theaters everywhere. And we've got the director and one of the stars in studio right now, Sofia Coppola and Kirsten Dunst are here.
Hi.
Ladies, so great to have you here.
Thank you. Hi.
Sofia, this is obviously based on a novel, and there was about a Union soldier who is injured, gets taken in at a boarding house in the South during the Civil War. Also made into a 1971 Clint Eastwood movie. What made you want to revisit this story? What was it about it that you wanted to tell and give your take on?
Yeah, it's set in a Southern girls' school, and they're really cut off from the world and haven't been around men during the war, and they take in this soldier and kind of turns her house upside down. I thought I would love to tell the story from the female character's point of view, because the Clint Eastwood film was told from the guy's point of view, and it's about a group of women at different ages, and I just think it's interesting, and also about kind of power shifts between men and women, all at the heart of the story.
When I watched this film, it's so beautiful. It is so incredibly beautiful. I almost felt like I wanted still shots of every scene, because it's really did you have and in my mind I was like, I wonder if Sofia Coppola has a vision board, or has music, or what gets you into that space, because you have such a unique eye in how you make your films.
Oh, thank you. When I'm starting to write the script, I definitely think of the visuals of what the world should feel like. And then I spent a lot of time with the cinematographer, Philippe Lesourd, and the art director and costumes. We look at pictures, pulling references and look at pictures together, so we're all on the same page of the world. And we had a lot of smoke machines and, making this atmosphere and shooting on a real location in New Orleans brought a lot to the atmosphere, I think.
What was that location like, too, in terms of the exteriors? Because you guys are on this gorgeous plantation.
Were you there before or after Beyonce?
We were after.
AB,
yeah. Love.
But it's interesting because it's absolutely stunning and beautiful, but obviously plantations have sort of there's a sordid history behind places like this as well. What was that sort of like?
Yeah, I mean, being on a real plantation, it's so beautiful, but there's such a dark history, and I think that adds to the atmosphere, and you feel it there, and that, definitely being one of those real places added to the atmosphere for all of us.
Were you always thinking of Kirsten for Edwina? Was this kind of, when you were writing this, did you have her in mind? And Kirsten, tell us about wanting to play this character also.
Yeah, I think even before I wrote the script, I was first thinking of the idea, and I said to Kirsten, I have something I want to do together, and I called her up, and so that was the first stage of it, was thinking, oh, I'd like to do this with Kirsten.
And Sofia gave me, she told me to watch the movie, which I'd never seen before. So I watched that, but, Sofia and I have a history together, so I would do any movie with Sofia. So it wasn't like, oh, I need to play this repressed woman. I would play any role with
Is it like you see on caller ID that she's calling and you're like, yep, got my next job?
We talk about other things, too.
Yeah. I was happy to get that email, though. But also on Marie Antoinette, too, I don't think you'd written the script yet either. No. She gave me Antonia Fraser's novel first.
Mm, so good.
Yeah.
Is there a shorthand, Kirsten, that you guys have on set now, is third time, I think, working together? In terms of what's the working relationship like with you two now? We're kind of, I'm assuming you guys know each other's beats a little bit and how you like to operate.
Completely. It's yeah, we're on the same page. We also work to prepare our films with the same person. So we're kind of immediately, and this was the first time that I'd worked with her, and, we worked together, this woman.
What do you mean by prepare your...
Oh, just this, she's kind of like...
Acting coach.
Yeah, she's an acting coach, but she's more than that.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been working with her since I was 27, but Sophia's worked with her longer to workshop scripts and things like that. But I work, so we really were on the same page.
Yeah.
Well, that's so interesting. And what was it about this character that you kind of dug into? What was it about her?
To me, I hadn't played that repressed of a person, I don't think, ever.
And it's so different than your personality, which was, I think it's fun to see an actress playing a role that's so unlike them.
Yeah, that was part of it, too. And also, she was kind of the heart of the story, because you really see what's happening in this house through Edwina. She's, you know, wears it all inside of herself, but also on her face. She doesn't say much, but she's dealing with the most, I think, confliction inside of herself.
And you get hints of moments of what her life was and might have been, and there's something very heartbreaking about that.
There's a sadness about this character.
Yeah, well, she's also of the age where in that time she probably would be a spinster, you know? So yeah. Poor Edwina, because she would have had kids by now and been married, and like she grew up in Southern society and was trapped kind of in this house.
Yeah, I feel like she's the most vulnerable, and you feel like this is kind of her, when he comes, it's like her last chance of mm-hmm. having a life outside of the girls' school that they're all isolated in.
What I thought was really interesting watching this film, and you talked earlier about how you really wanted to change the perspective, the original movie told from a male perspective, this from the perspective of the females. And because of that, I felt like we as the audience are kind of seduced as well by this soldier that Colin Farrell plays. You know what I mean? He seems sort of idyllic at first, and we as viewers are sort of, much like the characters, are sort of won over by him at first. I thought that's really interesting in that we end up in their sort of their perspective, which then is sort of shattered.
Oh, great. Yeah, I was wanting to tell the story from their point of view, and so that you see him through their eyes. And with Kirsten's character, you know, I want the audience to almost, should I believe him? Have that same hope so that as things shift in the story, it's hopefully a surprise, but to not be clear about if they can trust him or not. And I like that the title, The Beguiled, you don't know who's being beguiled.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I hadn't seen the first movie and I didn't read the book, so I didn't know where the story was headed.
Oh, that's not fun.
So yeah. For me, it was there, and without ruining it, because I'm sure many people haven't seen the original, there's a, you know, a shift that happens at some point, and I was floored by it.
Oh,
because
ooh.
I think, like, to what Dalton said, I had been completely just sort of caught up and beguiled by this whole, you know, and then it's really, it's a real shock to the system as a viewer.
Great. Oh, good. I think that's fun. And I felt like that when I first saw the 70s movie. I had no idea it was going in that direction and it goes that dark. And I wanted to, the world that you go into at the beginning, to feel this very like delicate Southern feminine atmosphere that's not threatening at all. So when the story progresses, it's hopefully a fun ride.
We're talking with Sofia Coppola, director, and Kirsten Dunst, one of the stars of The Beguiled, which does open this Friday, June 23rd in theaters. And Sofia, I know you did a lot of research in the role, and Kirsten, I'm sure Sofia maybe put you through the paces on some things. Like I heard you did some dancing or learned some dance moves, or how did that work? What's in terms of getting into the era and the character, how did that?
Well, in the beginning, we took a lot of different classes together as a group, which also kind of bonded us before we started filming. And we took dance. We had Nicole led us in Bible study. We table manners, how to pick up your dress, little things like that to not show your ankles.
I'm obsessed with the manners, like the manners of
obsessed
era.
With the Bible study.
We had an etiquette.
Yeah.
Just reading aloud from the Bible passages and talking about it.
Did you have like etiquette class?
We had an etiquette teacher come and she taught like table manners and how they would like hold their skirt at that time. And
yeah, who would you wait for? Who would you call miss? Who would you call ma'am? Like, you know, the different...
That was such a big part of their culture.
Did you realize just how rude you were? Like, after she came there, were you like, oh my God, I'm doing everything wrong?
I'm pretty respectful of people. I don't feel like I'm, but
it's very Southern to call everyone miss. Mm-hmm. But still today, Nicole said her kids call adults miss so-and-so in Nashville.
Is there like a speaking order, too, in terms of when it's appropriate like to speak, or how does, like, in terms of that's like the man should speak in a certain, like, I don't know, like that's...
I don't remember that, but I remember reading a book of, like, there was an etiquette book of the time, and it said, like, you should never acknowledge a compliment because that's, you know, encouraging one. It was very about, like, modesty and being,
Yeah, it
it's
is
fascinating.
It's a fascinating time for women, and I love, you know, it's makes it all the more, I think, important to tell this story from a woman's perspective, because they were so, you know, in many ways disempowered at that point. And it's why I love that there are, even though it doesn't ultimately lead to a good place, but there are moments of sexual empowerment, there are moments of physical empowerment that really resonated.
Yeah, I love that they were, you know, strong even in these kind of, they were raised to be very delicate and feminine, but that they were strong women underneath all that.
I think every set sort of probably has like a vibe to it or of some sort. You guys have made three movies together now. I'm curious what the just sort of vibe or tone on set was and if it was different from the other two movies you all have done together. I mean, I guess there is sort of a yin and yang maybe with Virgin Suicides in this film. I can definitely see maybe. So I'm just curious, Kirsten, did you feel like a different tone or vibe on this set as opposed to the other ones you guys have done together?
I feel like this one, because we had so many fun ladies on set, we'd always end up sitting at the back table of Jennifer Coolidge's house where we shot all the interiors in the Garden District.
Seriously?
Yeah, we all would. Wow. Yeah, it was like Sunday night dinner on the porch. Yeah. We'd always like gather around there and just
hang out on the porch while we were waiting for setup.
It felt.
I think because
fun.
We were shooting all, it all takes place in one location, we were all kind of together out on this plantation or in New Orleans, which was different than when we've worked before, running all over the place. So it had a kind of intimate, nice feeling.
Yeah, because we only shot it in 26 days,
Wow. So
yeah, and also with the little girls, they had to be in school. So they did, you know, schooling on set. So we kind of like lose them as the, depending on how much schoolwork they got done. So there was a lot of acting with no little girls as well.
That's hilarious. Yeah. I love that. Oh, it's so funny. Do you guys remember the first time you ever met?
I remember meeting in a hotel in Toronto when I was casting Virgin Suicides, and Kirsten came with her mom, and she was 16, and she was the character Lux for Virgin Suicides.
Of course, yeah, I love that movie. And what did you feel like, an instant connection?
I mean, I was younger. I felt like, I feel safe, because I was kind of nervous playing Lux. It was just out of my comfort zone of what I'd done before. But then I just felt, you know, like comfortable and...
Yeah, Kirsten was there while I was making my first movie, so I was just figuring it out, too. So we've been through a lot together.
What's it like when you go back and look at, like you said, you're making your first movie? I mean, I'm curious in terms of, like, choices you made or things you've learned since then. Do you look back at your own old work like that or not?
I don't really revisit them, but we were talking about it, and she was reminding me of how my mom was on set doing a behind the scenes, and she was worried because I wasn't eating because I was so stressed out. I'm like, you have to remember to eat. So now I eat while I'm filming. I'm not a nervous wreck, you know. But the first time I was, pretty overwhelmed.
I love that. Mom.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Get her a sandwich.
Well, the Beguiled, it opens this Friday. We really enjoyed seeing it and really enjoyed talking to you guys about it. Everyone should check it out.
Congrats on Cannes.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Thank you. It's really exciting. And I hope people see it in the theater with their friends, because it's fun, I think, to see with other people and laugh and be freaked out together.
Yes, on a big screen.
Sophia Coppola, Kirsten Dunst, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it. Beguiled opens this Friday. That's going to do it for us. Say goodbye, Jessica.
See ya.
TV and movie interviews sent right to you, subscribe to the EW Morning Live podcast on iTunes. And to get 24-hour entertainment news and views, check out Entertainment Weekly Radio at channel 105 on Sirius XM.